Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. And my guest today is somebody that I've known for quite a while, but it wasn't until last year that we met in person at what I call a high-level mastermind group, where we spent a full day together and really delving into the industry. And it's because of that day I wanted to invite him onto the podcast today just to chat and see where we end up. It is Managing Director of Marketing Signals, Gareth Hoyle.
Hello. Hi, Gareth. Thanks, Mark. I think it was in the glamorous surroundings of a hotel in Birmingham. So there you go.
It certainly was. It wasn't a Caribbean beach or anything.
It wasn't, was it? You're having a terrible buffet and a good chat. So all good with me.
Oh, wonderful. Now, for the people watching this and listening to this who doesn't really know who you are, could you give us like a whirlwind tour of when you started in the industry and how you started and what's happened from then till now?
Yeah, so started building and optimizing websites when I was still at university, circa 2006-2007. Started to need traffic to get to these websites. So started to learn a little bit more about SEO and just read and practiced and tested and built my own sites. Got fed up of dealing with small businesses, so tried to find a way that I can actually supply to SEOs so that I can speak to my own people all day. When I was at university, I also worked at General Electric, so learned the business model of outsourcing. So I built a link building agency up to 300 staff at our peak, working 7 days a week, three shifts a day, mainly out in India, just a handful of staff in the UK. Penguin came along and just destroyed that business model overnight. So I do have empathy for these AI bros that are getting kicked left, right and centre this month and last month. So I then pivoted towards a SEO company rather than a link building company called Marketing Signals. We also offer PPC and we also offer paid social. We don't do any web design. We don't do any development. We are solely a marketing house. There's 20 of us now, 16 in-house, four VAs, if you like, based in Philippines that do some data running for us. I personally have a passion for digital due diligence and being nosy and looking at what things are worth and trying to help accountants and lawyers value communities and domain name portfolios and just general internet nerdery for the last 20 years is probably the easiest way to put it.
Wonderful. Do you think that experience you've had has allowed you to really help other businesses? And not only that, it's not been just an upward trajectory. You know, you've had to hit rock bottom to come back up again.
Yeah, I mean, some people at the moment, a lot of agency owners are giving up for want of, or retiring or moving on or however they want to brand it. It's hard in agency world at the moment. If I'm honest with you, it's been hard since 2012. I think running an agency is hard. You certainly need resilience. And in terms of general business skills, well, yeah, just because what we sell is digital, I mean, most of my problems are people shaped. So I think it's gives you mad skills that you can't even think about on the fly that are just built into your psyche and persona now, that when you go, or when you as in the royal you, when I go into a business that I've never been in before, you just spot stuff and you're like, why are you doing it like that? Like the and you almost become a business consultant rather than a digital marketing advisor. But this is what, you know, some broad shoulders here. So it's just what it is. We chose this life, didn't we? So it is what it is. I wouldn't change it though. It's what I know. It's what I love, really. I still love gaming. I still love beating people in a competitive sense rather than a physical sense. But I like, you know, if I'm number one, you're number two. Happy days. So yeah, I love what I do, and it's given me so many transferable skills that even if I started a roofing business, I reckon I'd be pretty good at it because I understand marketing, I understand product, I understand customer service, I understand delivery, I understand billing, most important part of the equation, and I understand business. And I just think that that's going to put you ahead of anyone. If you think about the FTSE, a lot of CEOs come via sort of the finance route, whereas in the future, we might see more CMOs becoming CEOs rather than it being the CFO route. I'm also quite fiscally astute, which is hopefully going to stand me in good stead. But who knows what's around the corner, eh?
Yeah, who knows? I can so relate to what you're saying there. As we mentioned when we met last year, the first thing I said is I've never, whatever, want to build an agency ever again myself, personally. I mean, I've got plenty of scars down that route. But now I focus more on like an SEO advisory role, going into companies and agencies. And like you said, a lot of what I'm advising on is more efficient business efficiency stuff. Because until you get all that efficiency stuff sorted, then all this stuff over here won't work right. And do you find that when you working with the businesses you work with?
Yeah, I mean, specifically with lead gen, and I'm an analogy type of guy. And I always think of it as we're on holiday, there's a strip of bars, loads of people walking down. I'm in marketing. I'm out there handing out flyers, getting them to come into the bar. If nobody's serving them a drink when I get them in, they're going to leave. So if no one's picking up the phone, and really a business phone should be answered within three rings in theory, if nobody's closing the deal, if no one's putting it into a CRM and managing the pipeline, then what's the point in spending money at the front end if you're just going to let it leak out at the back end? Similarly with e-commerce, where if you can't fulfill the orders that we're generating, if you've not got the stock, if you're selling a physical product that needs to come over from the Far East, or you need to import it from America, and you haven't got enough in stock for the traffic that we can potentially send, and bear in mind with PPC, we can make your sales to tomorrow, then there's no point doing it. And it's like you say, it's that is that I think SEO and search or digital marketing, if you wanted to generalize it, it just develop you an efficiency mindset that I think a lot of other departments don't seem to have. And I don't know whether that's because they're used to working in corporates where it's just you don't worry about the money because we're just a $1 billion corporate. But I don't know. I've always been a bit of an efficiency master, to be honest, but it's always been my money. So, you know, if we're being slack in our processes, well, this guy's the one that's paying the bill at the end of the month. And it's amazing how many businesses trade for money. Like, I go into some and I'm like, I don't even know how you guys are making any money, but I could probably double your profits in 3 days a month for 6 months. Just coming in and just picking up stones and seeing what's under them. And, you know, you think sometimes business owners don't want to know, and I'm as guilty as this, they don't want to know what's under the stone, do they, sometimes? And there's nothing wrong with that, but your money, you're wasted, so...
Yeah. Do you know what? I talked to an awful lot of SEOs over the years, and that exactly what you've touched upon there, I'll say to them, well, you're working on this campaign. If it was your own money you was investing and spending, would you still do that? You know, what you, and honestly, that one thing, that one mindset changed the radical thinking behind everything. Well, no, I wouldn't, because I'd spend it here. I said, well, why are you doing that then?
I mean, it's hard because a lot of SEOs is, especially like we do a lot of PR and content marketing type stuff. So these are creative thinkers. They're not necessarily business brains, if that makes sense. Now, they should be, or they should have an element of business acumen, but the creative side, the arty side of the brain versus the science side of the brain, it is hard to get it across to them. And we've started getting pretty strict on our time tracking with the team at the moment, because some of the content they were producing was amazing, but when you actually put a pound or dollar note figure to what it's actually cost to produce that, you think, I'm not sure there's an ROI. Like, it's good content, and you know, the client's happy. In a way, we should be happy because we've charged them X amount of money to do one piece of content. But you just think, we're going to have to shift a lot of product to justify spending that much money on that. So again, that just comes down to the efficiency monster, doesn't it, really? Like, where are we wasting it? And I do try and get across to my front of house team, like, that if this were your money, like, and not even from my perspective, but from the customer's perspective, like, think about reporting. Like, the customer's paying you, obviously, different fee levels with all different customers. Let's say £10,000 a month. Customer's paying you 10 grand a month. Imagine that was your 10 grand a month. What are you expecting back? Like, you want clear comms. You want to know what's being done and what has been done. You want to know what you're getting. You want to know when the returns come in, as best as you can model that with SEO, obviously. And I think it's just having a bit of empathy to the budget holder. And I say budget holder because it could be the MD of a medium-sized company, or it could just be the head of SEO at a corporate. But he's still got to defend his spending, his or her spending to their line manager. And if you're not willing to stand in front of the accountant and explain how you spent the money, you probably shouldn't be running that account, really.
Yeah. Are you seeing the industry changing, as in the expectations from clients now, as opposed to what it was, say, pre-COVID times?
Well, I think in general, the industry's matured. So I think that your average marketing manager understands SEO more than they did 5-10 years ago. I think there's a lot more acceptance of the fact that I'm sat in my basement rather than in an office, which I'm a big fan of. I've always been barely floating around the world, whereas my team were all based in an office. Whereas now it's quite normal for us to be having a 6-person Zoom or Google Meet call where we're just all in our kitchens, like just sat in our bedrooms, or I'm privileged that I have an office space. I think that people just understand it more, which is brilliant, because nobody wants to work with idiots. And we'd much rather have clients that actually get what we're doing. Because I suppose from a selfish agency owner perspective, my client contact is my voice inside that business that is fighting for my channel. So when they're looking at budgets and how they're going to spend next quarter or next half or next full year based on the company planning, if you're just a line on a spreadsheet that says SEO and everyone's like, well, no one really understands what that is, so we'll just lose that one. Whereas if the marketing manager actually understands the branding elements behind of SEO, as well as the commercial driving of the traffic, then you're more likely to be left alone, shall we say, because the way the world is at the moment, for some of our renewals, we're quite happy to just keep them at the same level, never mind growing them, because I know a lot of my peers that run agencies are seeing budgets being cut because SEO's jammed tomorrow. PPC is sales today. So it is it's tough out there at the moment, I suppose. But don't know, the strongest will survive, as they say. So,
I have quite a few conversations with different agency owners at different levels, and they're all seeing a shift. They're all seeing this. Even the people that look as though they're doing really well are seeing a shift in this. And moving forward, I think, what can agency owners be doing better that they're not doing now in order to grow instead of just trying to survive kind of thing?
Yeah, well, two sides to that conversation. You've obviously got the running of the agency, so attraction and retention of staff, because if you haven't got good staff, you're not going to do good work. And then you've got the other side, which is maintaining and growing budgets from your and attracting new customers. From the recruitment and retention, or the attraction and retention perspective, it is hard to find good staff. Like, the, you know, I've got to convince an, if you're really, really, really good at SEO, you can probably freelance and make as much as working for me. Not everybody wants that, because you've got to be selling, and you know, I have a lot of loyal staff that don't want to go and freelance. But we moved to a four-day week to try and, like, just stand out in a busy crowd. We're fully remote, so that means that we can attract staff from all over the world. I do still try and... I like my leadership team to be based in the northwest of England, because it, or at least in the UK, because at least I can just ferry them in for face-to-faces. Although it is quite often, we have a senior SEO lady that lives in Barcelona. It's usually cheaper for me to get her here from Barcelona than it is to get one of the guys from London up here, but such is UK trains. So yeah, from, in terms of attracting the staff, because like I say, bad staff, bad output, we've done that. In terms of trying to attract and retain new clients, transparency, let them know what you're doing, communication channels. Like we do as default a shared Slack channel with every client. For context, we have around 20 staff and around 23, 25 clients. So we're not a kind of stack it high type agency. Our average client's been with us, I think, 3.5-4 years. So we're kind of part of the marketing. Let's not get carried away. They'll still cut us at the next budget chop. But we are kind of built into their marketing processes, really. So that certainly helps. But I think just trying to explain in simple English what it is that we're doing and why we're doing it and when we can expect a return. I think I've sat on a number of SEO calls where kind of having to bite my tongue, because I can see even my own team are talking in riddles, really, because we talk to each other in riddles and abbreviations, and oh, we need more links. And I can just see the CEO going, what's a link? Like, he's got a marketing team that worry about that. But still, if the CEO or the MD, and on how you define that role, comes off the call thinking, yeah, I'm probably more confused than when I began, then you've got the call wrong, really. Like, know your audience and speak in terms of business. Like, we report into sales teams, really, for our lead gen clients, because they just, obviously, sales and marketing are generally the one and the same. And that sales director, with the greatest respect to him, doesn't really care how many words of content you've wrote last month, or how much coverage you got last month, or how many H1 tags you updated, or whatever, etc. He cares about, like, who's come through the door. Like, I've got six boys and girls there waiting for leads to come in. Why they sat on their hands? Like, that's what he cares about. And we try, and I'm not saying we're perfect at it, we try and communicate more in a business manner with those stakeholders, and then we talk geek speak, if you like, to the marketing team. It's why we love Looker Studio, because I can make different dashboards for different stakeholders. I've got one client that springs to mind that he has a TV in his office And on his TV is our Looker Studio report, which basically tells him how much we've spent, how much we've made, what the ROI is, how much traffic we've got, what the conversion rate is. That's all he cares about. Like, he just doesn't care. One of my sort of other extreme, I suppose, I had a client that was a lawyer, and we would have a monthly, quarterly catch up with him. And we'd be like, right, yeah, so, I mean, in terms of reporting structure, are you happy with what we're doing? Like, don't need a report, the phone's ringing. Like, it's that simple. Like, he doesn't need to know, oh, we've done this keyword, you know, we've spent 8 hours doing keyword research, and he doesn't care about keyword cannibalization. He just wants to know, when am I next in court, I suppose? Like, when am I next drafting some papers that can charge X amount? Sometimes I think when I see our legal clients, I think SEO is under charge, if I'm honest. So some of them lawyers are doing all right. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of the leads I'm receiving personally at the moment for my advisory service is not to grow organic. It's that they've already been working with an SEO agency who, I'm not going to lie, are not doing a bad job. It's just not turning into profitable revenue. And I think a lot of that, whether you call it CRO, optimization, whatever you want to call it, the fact is that MD has contacted me because the agency haven't done what he thinks they should have done, which is drive real new business.
And quite a lot of the time, I mean, like, as I mentioned earlier, I've got some creative staff that aren't brilliant at maths, for argument's sake. Good at drawing, less good at adding up. And I suppose it's trying to put the right person in the right seat in terms of, so at my end, I've got a head of strategy that is very commercially savvy. Like, he's like, yeah, but why are we doing it? Why are we doing it? Like, the first slide on his reports that he creates is money, not activity. And I think if it's also knowing the tools, like, we have so many tools to like, if nobody's thought to put Clarity or Hotjar on those landing pages, how do you know where it's going wrong? And I mean, there's also, how do I say this without annoying all the customers out there? Also depends what you're paying. Like, if you're paying for thinking time, then they should be doing it. But if all you're doing is paying for someone to do, so they don't have, and we try, and we're not perfect any shape or form, but we've started with a lot of our sort of last couple of years clients trying to build in a bit of maybe a couple of hours a week for strategizing and account management and just trying to get under the skin of the business, which I suppose is where your skill set comes in, where you can work with the end user and the agency, and you're in the middle saying, right, well, you're almost the referee, if you like, and just trying to help people. It's efficiency, isn't it? It's, you know, why are you spending your time doing that? Like, we rank okay at the moment. Like, because they could be winning in maps, but the SEO agency is thinking, oh, we need to get there organically as well. Whereas the first thing I'd be thinking is, okay, we're winning in maps, so we've got visibility. What happens when we get them to the site? Like, do we need to change the color of the button? Do we need to add video? Do we need to add more trust signals? And sometimes I think we obsess with driving traffic without, you know, if I can increase the conversion rate from 1% to 2%, we get twice the leads. Like, it's just math, isn't it, really? Or maths, depending on where you live in the world. That's where it comes down to. And what we spoke about quite extensively is, it's just business. It's marketing. It's not manipulating Google to get, no, we're not selling. I mean, I'm sure there are people out there. My customers aren't crappy affiliates writing 10 best LED TVs 2024 and trying to just get clicks out of the site. I work with brands. I work with decent sized businesses that do real business stuff, and they've got. So obviously it's kind of understood now that EAT isn't a ranking signal, but for me, EAT, and I'm going to assume the audience know what EAT is, by the way, Mark, it's a framework for success. So if you're demonstrating expertise, if you're demonstrating experience, if you're giving off authority and trust, then you'll rank higher, but also you'll convert higher because you're giving the user confidence that you are the person that can solve my problem and you are the person with the product that I'm looking for. And it's, I don't know, I think when you start to take that sort of approach with these things, it becomes obvious. And I, it's easy to sit here, 16, 18 years of experience, and say it's obvious, because obviously there are people, somebody today just started their first day of work in a digital marketing agency as an apprentice and is green and still learning. And these guys have got an advantage that we've spent the last 15 years trying to figure this stuff out. Whereas at least the content that's being produced now is mainly mature content that it's just marketing at the end of the day. It's just marketing in the same way that digital PR is just PR, but just in a digital arena. Some of our digital PR gets featured in press. You know, it's, I'll be honest with you, it's an accident. We didn't go for the press coverage, but it's nice when, I'll be forever on a doctor's waiting room table.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. But do you think that agencies strive to work with the known brands as opposed to the businesses people's not really heard of, is because I don't like to use the word easier, but because they already have built up that authority and trust, they're allowed to piggyback off that then to create a better positive impact?
Yeah, I mean, horses for courses. There are people that specialise in working with Dave the decorator and Rob the roofer. Not for us, if I'm honest. We tend to work at sort of the medium of SME and corporate. But yeah, it is easier because if we were to take, I don't know, let's just think of a retailer, let's say Selfridges. I don't work with them, by the way. I just had to try and think of a retailer off the top of my head. This is an unscripted podcast, so I didn't know. No preparation is done. If you were to work on the, let's say Selfridges started selling Nike trainers, it's going to be a lot easier to rank Selfridges for Nike trainers than it is Mark and Gareth's Backstreet Shop in Wilmslow.com. Because they're a real business with real brand signals that have been around since forever. I couldn't even tell you when I'd imagine Selfridges had a website on pretty much the first day the internet started. So let's use that as a definition of if they've been around for a while. And it is easier, but it also comes with challenges in that they've probably got antiquated technology. I don't know if they have again. I picked Selfridges at random. But a lot of the time, they're built on bad platforms. And they've got, for a long time, the website, and I think it still does, some of our clients, the website sits with IT rather than marketing. So just because I've got a priority to get something done doesn't mean that the guys in, let's stereotype, the guys in the basement for IT are in any rush to get it done. Because you're creating more work for them that they didn't know they had to do. And it's, you don't know what if it could be built on traditional ASP, and you don't know what dependencies are built into stuff that you want to change. So I like working with established businesses because they've already got a lot of EAT signals built in. From a PR perspective, it's a lot easier for me to get a brand featured because, again, trust, authority. journalists are more likely to want to reference Selfridges' product set than they are Mark and Gareth's shoeshop.com. So it is easier, and I don't mind using the word easier because it is fundamentally easier to get coverage for a brand, but that doesn't mean that the brand's internal processes will make it easy, because you tend to have a traditional PR department. If they're publicly traded, they might have quiet periods before results come out. But I've still got to hit my numbers to hit my marketing targets. But overarching business issues, say we don't care about your digital PR campaign. We've got reports to the stock market next month. There's a news ban. And it doesn't matter how well you get on with your contact, you ain't getting anything out for that month. And so, yeah, easy is relative. But that's, if it's not your first rodeo, then you know to anticipate these things, and you would just build it into your content calendar that this is when reporting season is for this publicly traded business. And we just need to make sure that we pedal a bit faster the month before reporting, I suppose, or use that dead month for ideation for the next quarter. So there's always stuff that you can sell them or do. Because we've got to use our hours because that's how we get paid. So, but yeah, I'm glad that I work with medium size to large size brands rather than small.
Yeah. Yeah, I can relate, because over the years I've done some auditing for well-known brands. And, you know, I know for a fact that nothing ever got actioned from it because of resource. Yes, I got paid quite a considerable amount of money to do the audit and go into these things and spot really crazy basic stuff that could be fixed just like that. Not asking for like 50 hours dev time. It's like quick stuff, but still didn't get done because of resource in-house and the many levels and channels you have to go through to get anything passed.
I've got clients that we haven't worked with for 3 or 4 years, but I've still got a ticket that's nowhere near the top of their queue. It's just how they... I mean, don't forget, a lot of these brands as well have decent budgets, which means they can just power traffic via paid. And all of a sudden, the fact that SEO isn't growing at the same clip as paid is less of an urgency for them because they're still making money. And again, if we stick with publicly traded companies, all the CEO and CFO care about a lot of the time is a quarterly share price. So as long as the share price is doing all right, no one's probably too worried about my JIRA ticket to fix that breadcrumb. It just doesn't, I suppose you've just got, it's business priorities. And just because our world revolves around SEO or PPC or marketing doesn't mean that the whole of the business does. We are just one function within potentially 10 different strands of that business. And if your contact doesn't have a loud voice within that business, then you're gonna struggle to get stuff done. But that's where hopefully brand signals can come in. And not as much as, I mean, we used to be able to get rubbish websites ranked just by powering horrible links at them. Can't do it as much anymore, but brand as a signal does still make up for bad code sometimes. I wouldn't say every time, but we've definitely seen sites which are slower than the average in the top 10 with content that's about average in the top 10. But because we've got a stronger off-page presence, if you like, we are still competing despite having an arm behind our back. But that, again, that's the beauty of brand.
Yeah. Do you think that if you are like a digital PR agency, or as you put it, just PR online, yeah. And the the company you're working with as an in-house traditional PR, is it important to streamline things with them? The reason I'm asking is because recently, last month, I was advising one agency and they got into what I call difficulties by the in-house PR team who are being contacted by all these publishers that the digital PR team has been contacting. So should there always be that sync that, because the in-house team don't really care about links?
So again, I'll try and give two different viewpoints to give balance to my answer. Traditional PRs in-house tend to be brand focused. So quarterly results, office moves, senior hires, that sort of company PR. Whereas a lot of our digital PR could be survey based in terms of like Manchester's got a better nightlife than Leeds, as an example, if I was doing it for a Manchester based hotel. So I think if there's a clear split between the two functions, then you don't have to be friends. But I will be completely honest and say the best campaigns that we've run, we're a PR team. We're just an extension of the internal PR team. And in theory, if you're doing enough PR, the internal PR team can be doing what they're doing, but also just be a conduit upstairs for the digital PR stuff. What we also try and do is if we know that the in-house PR team has worked with a publication before, we'll let them send the email. Like, we're not pressured. Like, why not, like, collaborate? And sometimes in-house teams will give us a no-fly list. So, look, we've got contacts for A, B, C, and D. Don't contact them because we're working with them on a bigger piece that we're hoping to push forward from a brand perspective. We can also introduce them to new trade press that they might not have contacts with at the moment. And I think it's trying to get across, like, I'm not trying to take that person's job. I'm trying to make them look better. Like, if, because it's all attributed as PR, whether it's outsourced via us or another digital PR agency, because there are more than one in this world, or it's attributed to the in-house efforts. Doesn't matter to us. Like, if it's easier for the in-house team to get the link, then we'll do it. We also do a lot of free training with in-house PR teams if we're working with them on an SEO basis to get them to think link, just so that they're, I mean, we have clients that pay us to chase their internal PR team around doing link reclamation. So they, you know, they get a lot of publications, but because they're not asking for the link, or they'll have a survey and they'll send it as a PDF, but they won't create a web page for it. Whereas what we would step in as the digital, you know, again, we're still in PR, but we're the digital people and they're the traditional people. If we want to sort of use those as the two different divisions of PR, then we will come in as the digital people and say, hang on a minute, why don't we do this? You've got this PDF, let's create that into a web page. Every publication you've had, why don't you offer the added value that the readership can click this blue line and come and have a look at the raw data? And it's collaboration, really. It's just working together. You do get a lot of kickback sometimes because they feel like you're stepping on toes, and quite a lot of the time, the traditional PR people aren't the ones that hired you. So it's usually like the SEO team or the marketing or the wider marketing team have hired the digital agency. Then all of a sudden the PR person's like, who are you? Like, I was doing all right till you came along. But that's where we try, and again, we don't get this right every time. I've got a call on Monday with an existing client that wants to expand the work that we're doing for them to include journalist requests. So things like Quoted, Harrow, or Connective, as it is now. Let's get her on the phone. So it is a lady in this case. Let's get her on the next call so that she understands where we're going to sit in this relationship between marketing and PR in-house and us as an external agency. And let's let her understand that we're here to help, not to hinder, she's not going to get made redundant because all of a sudden there's a digital PR agency involved. We're there to got the same goal, which is publications, visibility, share of voice, whatever metric you wish to use. But it's again, I said it at the very beginning, it's a people-shaped problem, isn't it? Like it's managing those relationships.
Yeah. Do you think that in essence, like agencies need to think of themselves as just part of the in-house team? It's just that they're not physically in-house and sitting there. So to have a mindset of, yeah, you're just part of this jigsaw and you're just a puzzle in it and it all fits together. But I suppose from an agency point of view, if you get into working with a client and that client thinks, well, you're just part of our team, you're not like an external resource we can cut off any time, then from a mindset point of view, that should benefit everybody involved.
As an agency owner, that's exactly how I want all of my clients to consider us, and we should be in multi-year contracts. I think the reality is we've had clients in the past where they didn't have a very good digital presence. We've come in, we've shown them the benefits of ranking, the benefits of PR, the benefits of getting your digital messaging right. Then they've tried to in-house it. What they're not realizing is the cost of tools, the cost of data. They see it as, oh, these guys cost, again, let's just use some simple math, $10,000 per month. Well, including pension costs, I can get a decent person for $5,000 a month. So I'm going to save half the money. You're not, because that person's going to need software budget, link budget, content budget, holiday pay. You know, like it's not quite as simple as swapping the fee for a salary. I do like to, you know, I'll contradict myself slightly here. I do like to think of us as being part of the client's marketing team. At the same time, I do truly believe that at work, we're not a family. You know, we go to work, my staff come to work to further their own careers and make me hopefully a bit of money at the end of the year. Like, we're not brothers and sisters. Like, we might go out for a few drinks and something to eat or go bowling or, you know, agency fun days. But the reality is, if it becomes fiscally unsustainable to maintain that agency relationship, they're going to cut you. Like, we lose most of our clients due to a change of personnel at the client. So you're my contact. You've brought me in. Everything's going well. We're all making money. We're winning. You move on to a different role, whether in the same business or in a different company. Someone else comes into your job. They might already have a Gareth that they want to bring in, because over 10, 15 year period, they've built a strong relationship with that agency. And so, whereas as an employee, once you've been employed for more than 2 years, it's quite difficult to fire someone. Obviously, there's ways and means, but it's quite expensive. Whereas most of our clients are on 6 or 12 month agreements. So there's no, you know, we've had new contacts come into businesses, and on day one, even if we had 6 months to go in the contract, pull the plug. because he knows or she knows, I want to work with the people that I trust. And it's hard because you've done nothing wrong. Like, we've done a good job. Like, look at the numbers. Like, you've never been busier. But again, people shape problems. They know who they want to work with. Maybe they're getting a kickback. I don't know, buggers. But we aren't, reality is agencies, we're not consultants. So a consultant's job is to work their way out of the business, obviously, once they fix the specific problem that they've been brought in for. We've got clients that rely on agencies. So they're decent multi-million pound businesses, but they've got like a marketing manager and a marketing assistant, and then they just rely on external relationships to fulfill the tasks, if you like. And they're perfect for us because then you do kind of become part of the team, but you only have a one contract period away from being dropped. Like, that's something I try and stop complacency with my team is, look, guys, you know, it's mid-April now. That contract's up in June. We could get an email any day saying we don't want to renew. So you should have been thinking about that in February in terms of making sure that the trajectory is upwards. And agency life is a hamster wheel half the time, isn't it? Like, you win one, you lose two, you win two, you lose one. You get to the end of the year and you net two customers. Like, for a lot of agencies, especially at the moment, finishing the year net two customers up is probably a success. And that's just, I don't know, as budgets get tighter and agencies get quieter, people are, I wouldn't say a race to the bottom, because cheap SEO is expensive. Trust me on that one. Like, the saving money on SEO can cost you your rankings, let's be honest. But it is, you know, people are step over each other. No, let's be honest, it's agency sales. Like, I will stand over someone to get myself onto that tender list. That's my job. I'd rather not take that approach to sales, by the way, to the whole of the internet that's probably listening. But agency sales is a tough job.
Yeah. So how can you get an agency, or how do you get your agency into a position where you're not in what I personally call a hire and fire, you know? So basically, you know, agency lab, well, you build up in-house resources at the agency because you've got X amount of clients, but then you lose them clients and no work for them. You need to find, and all this, then you know, that kind of environment. So where's the sweet spot in agency life?
Yeah, I mean, if I had the answer to that question, I'd be a wealthy man. It's why we make profit. And agency, no matter how people try and define it to you, is a little bit feast and famine. Like, you win three customers, all of a sudden you need to hire two more people. Next thing you know, someone cancels, then we're at sort of 80% capacity and we've got a lot of slack in the system. We train so that we're always better, so that when we are talking to new customers, we're totally up to date on our knowledge. So that's something that we try and do. At the end of the day, people buy from people. Like, if you build a good relationship with that person, because bear in mind that your client contact at the brand, they're being selfish for their own career as well. And if they bugger it up, excuse my French, but if they bugger it up in their job, or you get it wrong, it's you. They're the ones that are having to sit in those internal meetings and explain why sales are down 50% year on year. Like, that's no, you deserve to be fired, really, as an agency, because it's that person's career. Like, they've got their own plans and trajectory that they want to run. And they shouldn't let any one marketing agency get in their way. And if you start to think like that as an agency, then it should stop complacency kicking in, really. And again, you know, complacency does happen, and, you know, you get comfortable with clients, especially when there's, you know, sort of on like year four of the contract. But you've still got to hit your numbers, is the reality. But I also find that if you do hit your numbers, nobody questions you. Because if you're making money for the client, they've got no reason to go looking elsewhere, really. And it's not a perfect model, that, because, like I say, personnel changes, budget changes, they might want to do more out of home, especially like you mentioned, the how's it changed before and after COVID. Well, obviously during COVID, no one did anything out of home. Whereas if you think now, there are more, if we use SEO conferences just as an idea, during COVID there weren't any. Now there seems to be one every other day. So it's, you're fighting for this, it's the same budget split in more pots, in a way. So, but yeah, that's just agency life. It's been like that for as long as I can remember. You've just got to justify your existence, I suppose.
Yeah, I love that what you said there about understanding the real life impact, as in people's jobs are at stake here. You know, and I think sometimes some people in the industry are so disconnected with that reality, they're just focusing on numbers. They don't actually look at, well, by doing this, what impact to the real lives of these people will it make?
People sell to people. Like, you know, people talk to people. And just because you've driven X amount more traffic or generated X amount more coverage, links, sales, whatever the KPI that we're looking at, doesn't mean that that matches with what your client contacts' internal KPIs are. And they might have their eyes on a bigger prize that is totally accidental. Because you know what? And I'm the first to admit this. We all live in an SEO bubble. In the grand scheme of marketing, SEO's bugger all. Like, there are so many different channels. I am an investor in a dating app for widows, and we get some of our best conversions when we run TV ads during CAD file. So it's got nothing to do with SEO. It's to do with the demographic that you're trying to target, and whether you're watching telly and probably a bit bored. Sorry to the writers and actors of CAD file. And for those that don't know what it is, Google it, because it's been about, I don't think I've ever seen an episode, but I knew from the stats that we got a lot of conversions from that advert. Just be aware of what the bigger picture is, I suppose, and how, yes, search is the glue that, you know, can close the loop. So you run a TV ad with an offer, you should see more brand searches in the next 2 minutes after that advert. Well, if you haven't got the offers that were in the advert as the site links on your PPC ad, then you're not going to convert at the same clip as you would if that were the case. But really, there are many ways that somebody can spend their marketing budget that aren't SEO and PPC that you could argue are equally as effective.
Yeah. Now, as the time is rocking on, is there anything we haven't spoken about yet, but you really feel the audience needs to know?
I've quite enjoyed is probably a dark side of my mind. It's been interesting watching all the AI sites fail, if I'm honest, because 2012, before Penguin, we also thought it was easy. And I remember I was working with an airline and we had 10 of the front 10. But bear in mind, back in then, it was 10 blue links rather than all these multi-media that's in the SERPs these days. We had numbers 1 to 10 for the search term flights to Faro. and we were making EMDs and we were making all sorts of junk. And then Google got smart to us and we disappeared except for all but one site, the brand site. And I think ever since then, that's changed my attitude towards how we should be marketing online. And I really do hope, and there was a lot of people that were working in SEO back then that no longer work in SEO because they can't change to the new way of doing stuff. I really hope that a lot of these SEO AI bros that were just creating content on ChatGPT and blindly pasting it into WordPress, when they fail, 90% of them are going to disappear. But I hope the 10% that change and succeed become the future top marketers, really. So I think that I'm gutted for them because, look, hey, I had an easy life in 2010, 2011, just printing money, basically. But it won't last forever. And just because something's working today doesn't mean it'll work tomorrow. So hopefully they will clean their houses, shall we say. And nothing lasts forever. So enjoy it while it's there and invest it well.
And on that note, what conversations would you like to have with people and where can they find you?
Yeah, so the easiest place to find me is LinkedIn. I'm becoming more and more corporate as the years go on. I am on Facebook and X as well. So if you Google Gareth Hoyle, I'm doing my job wrong if you can't find me on all these platforms. I'm always happy to. I like solving problems. They're not always search problems, and I don't always charge for the advice to solve the problem. If it's something that interests me, then I'm happy to help a lot of the time. I'll always talk about PR. I'll always talk about links. I'll always talk about search. I'll always talk about websites. I'll always talk about coin collecting. I'll always talk about cars. If somebody's got a, going to sound like the A-team now, if someone's got a problem and no one else can help, and they think that maybe I can, call Hannibal. So, yeah, just drop me a message. And you know how it works in this industry, Mark. If I don't know, I probably know someone that can advise them. So even if I'm just pushing people into new relationships, then that's fine for me as well.
Well, Gareth, many, many thanks for your time today.
You're welcome. And hopefully I will see you in another glamour. Maybe next time we can go to Coventry. So
you've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.